Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Listeners, thank you so much for joining me. This is Mark on the Negotiations Ninja podcast. And today we're interviewing Tim David, guy who started off his career as a magician and now teaches people how to become more influential, more persuasive, so that they can make more money in sales. The thing about magic and the thing about magicians that these people understand at a level that we don't is they understand how influence and persuasion works at scale. And they do it every single day, all day. We talk about that a lot in this interview and how to think differently about what you're doing to gain more influence and to persuade more people. Absolutely fascinating discussion. I really encourage you to go out and buy his books. They are fantastic. If you enjoy this podcast, and we hope that you do, please tell your friends and family, your colleagues about it. Talk to us on social media and give us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. Enjoy this incredible interview with Tim David. Tim, we made it, buddy. How are you?
I am fantastic, Mark. Other than the unexpected snowstorm that we were just bombarded with.
That's what you get, man. That's what you get. I'm in Canada. We're sending it down south to Massachusetts. It actually starts. We start with the Dakotas, and then we send it to the East Coast.
Yeah,
and it's just our way of giving you a giant middle finger, right? Like, if we have to have it, you've got to have it too. That's just the way it is.
It's the middle finger from 2020, I think. It's just been giving it to us all year. So, wouldn't expect anything less.
Oh, I love it, man. So, listen, I know all about your work, but there are, shockingly, some people in the world who don't know about your work. So tell the people that are listening right now who you are, what you do, and the books that you've written.
Sure. Well, I started out as a magician. I think that is one of the more interesting factoids of my resume, if you will call it even a resume, doing, you know, card tricks out of high school, basically. And that was my first career. And I was traveling, doing between 300 to 350 shows a year, and quickly got, I don't want to say burnt out, but I had a kid, right? Or my wife had a kid, I should say. And I realized that the traveling magician and the parenting weren't as cohesive as I hoped that they would be or thought that they might be, and really sought a career change. I sought a life balance that was different than go, 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 be on the road all that time for the year. So quickly looked at my skill set. And like I said, never finished college. I only went to a few classes. I was doing magic full time. It was my passion and my business took off. And I learned all about the business of show business. But my question was, if I've never, you know, had a real job, how can I help people in their real jobs? What skills do I have? What skill can I bring to the marketplace, to the workplace? And very quickly, my stage presence was on the list. And the lessons that I learned that I thought were normal, everyday, ordinary stuff, it turns out people don't think, you know, defying the laws of physics on stage is a normal thing. So most people don't think that's very normal, but there are lots of lessons and takeaways from really just running the business, as well as that unique and interesting interaction between human beings on stage. And I think the lesson that I present now to people is very simple. It is about the human connections. It's not about the magic tricks that I did. It's not about the skills that you have. It really is about the people that you connect with and how you connect with them specifically. So the books that I've written really all are along those lines. The first was published through Penguin Random House. It was Magic Words. And that is just the difference between the part of the brain that does the speaking and the part of the brain that does the listening. And a lot of people don't understand that is a huge difference. Literally, different parts of the brain are in charge of those two different tasks. So it makes perfect sense as it's coming out of your mouth may impact someone completely differently. So Magic Words is about a series of words that just really highlight and expose that difference and show people how to use these words effectively. There's a couple other books. There's the Four Levels of Influencing People, which started out as True Influence. If you can get hold of a copy of True Influence, I would give you a high five. That would be impressive. I think I only have one myself, and they're on Amazon for like $400 or something silly like that. Not that anybody's buying them, but they just don't make them anymore. But my most recent is about the 7-day digital diet, about the interplay of human connection versus technology and how our human connections are being affected by our reliance on devices. So, Mark, whew, there it is. My life's work in what? I don't know, 4 minutes?
I love it, man. You know, we've had a number of magicians on the show for a very specific purpose. I love magic. And also because I think magicians understand intuitively, because of the passion you guys have, you understand intuitively the nature of influence and persuasion at a much deeper level than most people. We had Brian Brushwood on the show who talked about how biases work in the brain. And we had Banachek who talked about how he's able to use different body language tells to be able to guide you down the path that he wants to go to. And you've got virtually no control over it. People call that whatever they want to call that, hypnotism, or if they want to call it whatever he's got going on, mentalism, then that's fine. But the truth of the matter is, it's really just super advanced, deep skill set on body language and tonal inflection and all that kind of stuff. So I love that we've got you on the show as well, because what you've been able to do, I think, very successfully is take that magical knowledge, take that knowledge of persuasion and influence, and now move that into an area that can be used at scale across business. And I think that intuitive nature that you come to it with really speaks through in a lot of your work. So I'm going to start with, what is influence for those that are maybe confusing it with manipulation? Because I think a lot of people, when they come into this, they're like, but hang on. Are you saying that we should manipulate people? Or what's the difference between influence and manipulation?
So I believe that influence is essentially effectively contrasting what is with what could be. And if people certainly bring a lot of baggage when it comes to the term influence and manipulation, I think they conflate those two things quite often. And for me, I tell the story in the book Flip, which is the Four Levels of Influencing People, of my own sort of struggle with that and how I came to terms with it. And there's a story about a flower vendor. I was attending my wife's graduation from her master's program and super proud of her, wanted to show my love and respect and admiration for that accomplishment. And I get there, and of course, there's all these vendors all over the place. And there's this one right out front, perfect location. He's screaming and he's yelling. He's saying, 5 for these, 10 for these, 20 for those. So I walk over and I say, what is the biggest and best thing? Number one, like I said, I want to show my respect and appreciation. But also, I was with my father-in-law, and I wanted to one-up my father-in-law. We've always had this friendly sort of rivalry going on, if you will, ever since the day I asked for his daughter's hand. My favorite win of his was when my first daughter was born, and he held her in his arms, and he looked down immediately and said, remember, always, always remember, when daddy says no, Pepe says yes. So he always sort of had that friendly rivalry. So I'm like, all right, I got to outdo him here. So I'm like, what is the best thing you have? And he said, well, I got these flowers here for $25. Bingo, boom, $25, easy peasy. Here's a bouquet of flowers. They weren't great, but they were the best that he had. You know, it wasn't really super beautiful, but it was roses and very nice. Okay, I'll take it. My father-in-law decides to wait. We're walking. We go to get a sandwich. We come back. And there's this one guy who is standing on the corner and he's sort of almost murmuring, flowers? Anybody need flowers? Like, he's very meek, very timid in his approach. And he's got a cooler. He looks like he shouldn't even be there. Like he's a beggar or something like that. So my father-in-law smells an opportunity. He walks over. He says, what do you got? Opens up the cooler. The most beautiful flowers that I've seen all day, right? There's this gorgeous bouquet. He takes it out and he says, how much? And it's more flowers and they're more beautiful. And they got all the baby's breath and everything. And he says, it's $20. So now I'm really mad because here's a guy who has a better product. He has a better service because as soon as I kind of flipped out a little bit, like, oh, great. Of course, Pepe is going to win here again. And he said, let me see those flowers. He took my flowers, added three of his own, and then dressed them up like his, free of charge. So better price, better service. But because the other guy was louder, because the other guy had more marketing savvy, because he had better, maybe it wasn't even location. The guy was right across the street from the other guy. It was just the fact that he was louder. I was forced to settle for second best. So in the world of influence versus manipulation, I speak to the people who are the nice flower vendors, the people who aren't necessarily feeling comfortable at first with what it means to be influential or feel like there's something inherently wrong with being influential. But the truth is, once again, I think if you have that better product, if you have that better service, I'm sure you've heard it on the show before, it is your obligation to let people know so that they don't lose to Pepe.
I love that you said that, because I think that there's so many people who are in sales roles, especially, who feel like they're bothering someone. You know what I mean? And they come in with this attitude of like, well, I don't want to bother anyone. And once they're finished the call, sorry for bothering you, when they hang up on a cold call or something like that. But if you truly believe in your product, I feel like you are obligated. It's your job to tell as many people about it as possible. Because if you think it's going to be really impactful to someone's life and change the way that they do business, then you've got to tell people about it. And if you don't feel that way about your product, then get out of the game. Find another product, basically.
You know, and you don't have to necessarily be madly in love with your product. What I believe is, if you care about the people that you are serving, if you care about them, then you are going to do. And the job of a salesman is really matchmaker, right? Finding what is the best option for these people that you genuinely care about. So as it relates to manipulation, here's my belief. If your goal is persuasion, then your outcome will be manipulation. However, if your goal is connection, if your goal is service, then influence follows. It is not the ends justify the means. Well, I'm selling something really good, so I can use any sleazy sales tactic that I want. That's not the point. The point is, number one, it feels better to sell that way. And number two, it feels better to be sold to that way when there begins with a connection.
Do you think it comes from like from intention then of like, what's my intention? Is my intention to improve this person's life? If so, yes, then that's persuasion. Is my intention to get something out of this? If yes, then is that manipulation? Is it an intentional thing?
I would say that's a big part of it. I would think the intention is sort of the litmus test. You know, it's almost like the indicator of where your priorities are, where your methods will come from, you know, the source of that. So, but yeah, I really believe, you know, it's connection first and everything follows. You know, it's about the people that you're communicating with, because influence is at its core is a communication. Remember, I said it's effectively highlighting the difference between what is and what could be. That is a communication that happens between two people or more, right? Human beings. And I think if you start there, gosh, there's probably a lot of people who are just very, very bottom line, business focused, numbers focused, who are hearing me say this and it sounds airy fairy or hippy dippy or whatever. But I will tell you, the more I researched, especially for Flip, the book Flip, the more I researched the element of human connection as it relates to persuasion, it makes you more influential, not less. It is not nice guys finish last. Surprisingly, nice guys do finish last, but nice guys also finish first. And that comes from Adam Grant's research, as many other sources as well. So I think one of the things as a magician that is different maybe than some of the other guests, at least what you have mentioned, you know, some people talk about the tactics. For me, the biggest takeaway from magic was really one thing. And it was what we're talking about now, the ability to take the other person's perspective. When you're practicing magic, what do? You practice in front of a mirror, right? You practice your moves in front of a mirror so that you can see what they see. When I coach or consult other magicians or speakers, the first thing I have them do is record themselves on video so they can see what the audience sees. Magicians obsess over this. I have heard it countless times when I was learning magic, when I was attending conferences and talking to magicians and talking shop. Anytime I was learning a trick, I would say probably 90% of all tricks I ever learned, there would be somebody saying these words, watch your angles. Oh, and watch your angles here, which means consider what every single person in that auditorium is looking at. Think about every person's perspective, and what a game changer, not just in the literal sense of what they're seeing, but also, and that's where Magic Words, the book, came from, is it is completely focused on what is happening in the brain of the listener, the receiver of your influence, And how can we understand that so that we can better, not just better, but more intentionally push the buttons? Because you're pushing the buttons. When you communicate, you're pushing people's brain buttons. Whether you like it or not, you are manipulating, you are influencing, you are persuading, whether you're doing it intentionally or accidentally. So my goal is to help people just be more intentional and understand, hey, when your words are this, this is what's happening in the brains of the people around you. Watch your angles.
I've heard the same thing from stand-up comics about how they would practice their routine on the road to make sure that they were always because it's not like you just come up with a routine and then all of a sudden it's great. You've got to practice it at scale with a bunch of different audiences to determine what works, what doesn't work, how people are going to view one thing, how people are going to view another thing. And I think this really speaks back to something that you talk about in Flip, which is your true hierarchy, right? When you talk about technique first, so many people, I think, believe when they want to get influential or they want to develop their persuasion skills or get better at negotiation, they believe it's just something that you've got to learn, read in a book, and then all of a sudden you're good at it. And that's just not true. Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. For the people that haven't read Flip, can you talk about your true hierarchy?
Yes, happy to. But I also want to highlight something that you just said that is huge. I think it's extremely important and liberating for a lot of your listeners. And what that is the idea, Joan Rivers, a comedian, she said, you need to have a place where you can go and be bad for a while. In other words, you don't become great by reading books and studying. This is an interpersonal skill, right? And now it's a sort of a new skill that we're doing over Zoom and virtual means as well. So we kind of have this new soft skill that we're working on as well. And skills like that are not downloaded into your brain like the Matrix by reading a book or by studying a technique. Those things help to get you good. But if you're going to ever get great, you've got to get those reps in. You've got to get that practice in. Same thing, like I said, for magicians, same thing for comedians. And I think that's very liberating to say, okay, I'm just going to take this next sales call. I'm just going to go ahead and reach out to this next person. Not with the goal of being perfect, but with the goal of creating that connection and just sort of seeing where it goes and how I can improve, right? So to improve versus be perfect. So I think that is a very big deal because a big part of the difficulty of influence is the resistance to try. It feels scary to try to sell somebody on something. It feels awkward to walk up to a group of strangers and say, hey, do you want to see a card trick? Those moments only break down when you have those repetitions. So I always say, I tell my magician friends, get good, get gigs, get great. You can't skip the gigs part. You can't skip the repetitions part. So that said, you know, those techniques, great. You want to learn those techniques. That's wonderful. And that is the first tier of what I call the true hierarchy of influence. And I think a lot of influence books, a lot of coaches, a lot of websites, they really stop there. They stop with the techniques. You know, you mentioned people saying, well, these are the body language techniques that you use, and these are the language patterns that you use. And good techniques can only get you so far. You can have the best technique in the world, but once again, if you don't get the other tiers right, you could still have no success. And there was one, I don't tell this story a lot, but there was a conference that I spoke at, and I scripted the perfect presentation. I took every technique in the book, I put it in that presentation, and I tried to use like some course I was selling at the end. And I sold nothing, absolutely nothing. There were other speakers who just, people were storming to the back of the room, like literally pushing each other to buy the stuff. And they were bad at selling. My mind was blown. So this was in my early 20s. And that was the lesson that I learned. Hey, there's more than technique here. So the second tier above technique is relationships. And the four techniques, you can remember them with the anagram TRUE, T-R-U-E. T stands for techniques, R stands for relationships. This is why you will buy those Girl Scout cookies from your niece, even though you can get them cheaper at Walmart and sooner, right? Because you got to wait for them to ship to you and everything. So because of that relationship, she could have the worst sales pitch in the world. She could have zero technique. And similarly, it's why Oprah could go on TV and say, hey, I'm reading this book. I love this book. She could flop all of her words, but still that book is going to become an instant bestseller because of the relationship and connection that she has with her audience. So relationship trumps technique, right? You could have bad technique, great, solid relationship, and still create influence. Now, there's still two more tiers. A lot of people understand, hey, people are more valuable than the bottom line. And I understand relationships are more important than facts and figures and money and this and that. But there are two more tiers, and the U stands for understanding. I believe that there are some relationships that some people just hit it off and they have an instant connection and we don't know why. That's great for those people that you hit it off with. But I'll tell you, any of your listeners, I know you mentioned that we, you know, you have some crisis negotiators, and you know, I did some suicide hotline prevention myself for about a year. We take a lot of calls, and it's sometimes difficult to instantly connect and hit it off with someone who's in a very different place than you. If someone is a criminal committing a crime, if someone is in a very dark place and they're desperate, sometimes that natural automatic connection isn't going to be there. So what do you do in those cases? And this is where understanding comes from. Understanding perspective. Like I said, perspective taking was the single greatest lesson that I learned from being a magician. Watching your angles. What does it mean? Not just what do they see? How are they interpreting what they see? What's going on in the mind? Because magic doesn't happen in the eye. Magic happens in the brain. So that is huge to be able to have that skill of understanding. I mean, anybody who's studying influence should understand psychology, as much psychology as you can. If you work with people, you want to know how people work, right? That's the takeaway there. And then the final tier is E, which stands for ethics. And once again, this brings us back to some of our earlier conversation about responsibility to connect first, to having that proper intention and being a person of strong character, because I think influence is not a short-term game. Mm-hmm. Some transactions are short-term, but influence is a long-term game, and therefore your ethics and your character will continue to reflect on your influence ability over that long term. So those are the four tiers, and they build on each other. And once again, there you have it.
The thing that I think is great in understanding, especially in that tier, where you talk about how someone not only sees it from a different angle, but you really have to put yourself into their shoes to be able to not only understand the angle, but also to understand their perspective, because there is a perception that comes with the reality that they see. And I've heard a lot of people who especially are good stage acts talk about how perception is reality to the audience. And I think that we really miss that a lot in a sales context, because we often are selling from our own perspective and for what we perceive the benefits of the customer to be, instead of trying to understand what the benefits could be to the customer and really understanding that perception. Can we talk about for a second how we can really understand what the perception is from the person that we're working with?
A common symptom of lack of understanding, selling to the benefits that you think are important versus what they think are important.
Exactly.
What tends to happen after that is overselling. So someone may commit and say, yes, I am in because of this, but you haven't finished your sales pitch yet. You haven't got all the benefits out that you want to get out. You're thinking, but wait, no, there's more. And then the overselling takes place, and then things can sometimes break down after that. But to your question, how do you create a deeper understanding? One of the people that I interviewed for the 7-Day Digital Diet was Julian Treasure. Julian Treasure is, I think he's one of the top 10 most viewed TED Talks of all time, 100 million views of his TED Talk, How to Speak So That People Want to Listen. And his phrase that I like a lot is, you always speak into a listening. You are always speaking into someone's listening. And that can be a very different thing than someone else's listening. Now, if you're doing one-to-one, very simple way to learn and understand people is to listen to them. They say, you know, you should be doing 80 to 85% listening, 15 to 20% talking in a sales context. And the talking that you should be doing is what I call the three levels of questions. So, what brings you in today? You know, what got you excited enough about our offer to reach out to us today? I like that question a lot. It starts with that, what got you excited? It kind of almost implants that idea of being excited, or at least reminds them of the idea that they were excited enough to give you a call. And you can build from there. And they say, well, I'm looking for this. Great. If you had that, what would that do for you? So you're asking the second level of that question. So you, they tell you the feature, then you ask them what the benefit of that feature is. You don't say, oh, great, you're coming in here for this. That's wonderful because it does this, 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 and this for you. Nope. Let them fill that in. Say, okay, so what is important about that? Why are you looking at one of those as opposed to one of these? And they'll tell you that benefit. But the third level is you basically ask the same question again. Okay, so if you had that benefit, what would that mean for you? What would that do for you personally? What would that allow you to do? What would that allow you to stop doing? What would that give you and your family? What would people think if you had this? Those are those emotional benefits that truly drive buying behavior. So, my gosh, how do you understand those things? You ask, and then you listen, and then you ask a level deeper, and then you listen, and then you ask that third question. See, great salespeople are great askers of questions. And if they can get to that third level of asking questions, then that's where you're going to find the gold. So, man, oh man, that's the most obvious way, is to ask and to listen. Not everybody has the luxury of having one-to-one interactions and plenty of time to do so. In the book, I know I have this, what I call this itch target, the itch target of understanding. And, you know, every person is an individual, but they also belong to a tribe. Maybe they're an employee of a company. And if you can understand a little bit about that company, you go on the website, you can have a head start. Maybe that tribe is part of a culture, right? So that company is part of American business, or it's part of the, you know, or it's in China, or it's in India. Well, now, you know, you have some hints as to what the culture might be. And the final tier, when you zoom all the way out, is sort of the human level. And this is why I say you want to understand people, you want to understand psychology, you want to understand the brain. So those bullseye targets, those concentric circles, are the level of the individual, the tribal level, the cultural level, and then the human level. And each one of those gets you closer to more and more understanding the more you zoom into that center.
I think what a lot of people, there is, by the way, for the listeners that are listening in right now, if we don't have at least 5 pages of notes, I think you've really missed the boat on this. So I want to dwell on here for a second is how people stop at that second level of question. Because I feel like people are, for whatever reason, convinced that other humans are rational and logical, which is not true. So when you're a salesperson or someone involved at any kind of negotiation, I think what we're really good at is saying, hey, what are you coming in for? And what would that do for you? But that's where we stop. Usually we don't get to the emotional level, which is, we know that's the thing that's going to generate the sale. So when we can connect the emotion to whatever it is that we're selling, that's when we start to really see our conversion rates go up. Why do you think that we assume that people are going to be making these logical decisions? And do you think it's just a lack of knowledge to get down to that emotional level? Or do you think that we're lazy and that's why we're not getting down to that? Because it's harder. It's harder to get down to that emotional level of question.
You know, it's funny that you ask the question, because if I introspect, my first reaction is, well, it can't be laziness, because if you know the right way to do it and it's going to result in the outcome that you want, then you'll obviously do it. But that's the logical part of my brain thinking as well. So the true answer is, I don't know. And that's a beautiful thing, because the brain is divided into these two, they're not even halves. There's two areas. One of them is very small. One of them is very large. The very small area is the level of consciousness that we're aware of. There's a lot going on behind the scenes that your brain is not even telling you about. Malcolm Gladwell says there is a locked door in your brain and you don't have the key. You cannot access the part of your brain that is churning away, making decisions, creating behaviors. And then you're kind of on a need to know basis with your brain. Your brain kind of bubbles up a few things, gives you some explanations. Some of them are just outright lies. So I used to love this trick that I used to do with an audience member. I'd say, hey, think of a number. And I would make them think of seven. I would make them do it. I would use an influence strategy that would get them to say seven almost 90% of the time. But then I would ask them, why did you say seven? And they would always come up with a BS reason. Oh, seven's my lucky number. I have seven kids. Seven is the first number in my phone number. Well, we make all of our decisions with emotion, but then we justify them with logic. We back them up with logic.
Powerful.
So the question here is, how do we do it? How do we understand it? I mean, it really is so far below the surface that I think that is why many people don't sort of engage on that level. And there is a challenge because it's not cut and dry. It's not black and white. It's not logical. So a couple of great resources for your readers, if they haven't already read something like Predictably Irrational or Thinking Fast and Slow or any of those big classic books on understanding the nature of thinking and decision-making, How We Decide by Jonah Lehrer. Gosh, and another one, anything really based on the Sandler method. So there's a book called Common Sense Selling. And Mark, I'm going to have to get you maybe a link for the show notes. It's not something that is really well known, like a lot of those other classics that I mentioned. But when it comes to what questions to ask, actual, practical, step one, step two, say this, say that, it really does, I think, the best job of putting this human process into a formula that is repeatable and effective that I've seen. So I would definitely recommend something like that as well.
Yeah. And for the listeners, just so that you know, the first two books that Tim mentioned are just like, if you've ever done any kind of research in behavioral economics or psychology, they are the two that you should absolutely read, especially Thinking Fast and Slow, which I think is just massive, but it's so, so important, especially when Kahneman gets into system one and system two thinking. For a lot of people, that'll help explain to them why certain decisions are being made in a certain way. Maybe won't necessarily teach you how to ask the questions that generate those decisions, but it will teach you about why those decisions are being made, which will help you then, of course, with the other book that Tim is talking about. Okay, now that you know why, here's how you do it. And I think that that's key. Tim, this has been fascinating, by the way. I love that you're so deep into this. So I feel like we can go on for hours. As we wrap up, what's your final thoughts for the listeners? What's the one thing that you want them to take away from today's discussion?
I think it really does boil down to the simple yet incredibly complex notion that connection has to be your motivation, has to be your first motivation. As I said, if persuasion is the goal, manipulation follows. If connection is the goal, true influence follows from that. So if there is one big picture idea takeaway, it is that. Begin with connection, not in spite of all of the technology that we're using right now and the difficulty creating those connections, but because of that. I think we're so starved for it now because we have so many interactions that happen through a screen or through text on a screen, that when you input some human connection and create some genuine connection via or through technology, then magical things can happen. So focus on human connection, focus on serving the people, serve first, sell second.
Let's talk about your latest book. I want to get an understanding of why, first of all, did you decide to do this? Because you didn't have to, you've got enough fame and success. So why do this? And then where can people find it?
So the latest book is The 7-Day Digital Diet, and it was sort of thrust upon me, if you will. You know, when I talk about human connection, I talk about it from the sense of what we talked about here today. A lot of other people, when they hear the word human connection, and I say, I'm a speaker on human connection, they say, great, because I hate cell phones. And I'm like, whoa, hang on a second. You know, wait a minute. So the requests for, you know, can you get on stage and tell people they need to throw their phones in the river? I'm like, well, I don't believe that personally. I don't think we need to go full Amish in order to have human connections. You know, I think we can use technology as long as it's a tool and as long as it's not the master, then, you know, I think technology does make a great servant.
Have it serve us.
Have it serve us, right. So the book is really just, how do you make that happen practically? You know, I've read a ton of books. I have teenage daughters, right? I have a 5-year-old son as well, but I have an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old. So I guess barely, you know, preteen. And man, oh man, talk about negotiating, you know, with them and their devices. And I pull out every trick in the book. But, you know, the idea is, what can we do that's practical? It's not break up with technology. It is not the digital detox. It is just like baby steps over the course of 7 days. And I've always been fascinated with all of my work. What are the tiny hinges that swing big doors? What are the tiny wheels that drive those big trucks? What's the little difference that we can make over here that produces this huge result over here? So that's what the 7-day process is all about. It's one of the more fun projects I've had to work on, and a lot of great feedback. People seem to enjoy the writing style itself as well. But yeah, and the results, oh my gosh, the people that have gone through the program, I had a bunch of sort of trial groups, and I've led a bunch of people through the 7-day digital diet. And man, oh man, that's what we're looking for, is those kinds of results, to have technology be a part of our life, but not control it.
Man, I am super stoked that you wrote a third book. I was hoping that you would. Now I'm going to go and pick it up. It's available on Amazon, I would assume.
It's all over the place. Yes. Amazon, there's a hardcover edition. There's an ebook. There is no audiobook for this one. I even debated whether or not to put out the ebook. But again, in the vein of let's use technology for good here, if you want to read the book on your phone, go ahead. That's fine.
I love it, man. This has been an absolutely fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with the listeners. If they wanted to follow you online, how do they go about doing that?
Moreinfluential.com is the place where I sort of practice what I preach the most. And here are the freebies and the giveaways. One of the things that I think your listeners will find the most interesting is, it's one of the giveaways called the Influence Cheat Sheet. And it's 65 science-based sales techniques. And it's just all these different things that I've pulled from the research, but also life experience as I've written all these books, and just kind of compiled them into one massive list of influence techniques. So that's completely free at moreinfluential.com.
Amazing, man. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. For the listeners, just so that you know, we'll make sure to include all these links in the show notes so that you can get access to them. Highly recommend that you go download today the Influence Cheat Sheet, those 61 science-based sales techniques. It's going to help you with everything that you do. Tim, again, thank you so much for being here, man.
Mark, this is awesome.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.